send in the next applicant.
Hi. Hello, sir. I'm here for love, by love, with love. And I think I'd be a great fit for your opening.
Well, the previous broker's post has ended. So thank you for coming into Love, Inc., as you come highly recommended. Your passion's unmatched, but most devotion is dead. With all the hate in this world, love is in the red. Never mind full-hearted smarties helping us stay human, but due to the heartless faults of a few hopelessly stupid, and a serial dating scene that seems to be infinitely looping, I'm interviewing you for the position of the new Cupid.
A position that fits me. I plan on having all the past Cupids look at me as the true angel of love.
So aside from the romantic resume, what makes you ready to play? Because it's not all sax and violins, nor a bunch of wedding bells and harps. Are you willing to play the part as I assess your qualifications to start?
I'm a lover boy who's been torn apart. Two strikes is the pitch count of my heart. Love wounded me twice, but left me with wisdom. Wisdom I won't let go of due to a toothache.
But what will you do when faced with the truth? For truth's sake. That inevitable cycle of ardor's arduous heartbreak, which can be damn near impossible to bounce back from.
Like Spalding on hardwood, I tend to rise even when dropped. Optimism is something I try to hold on to despite hardships. I keep my smiles framed for all those to see, even if life has given me bruises and caused me to lose some teeth.
Look, I'm not some tooth fairy animal chief slash part-time enamel thief who's merely theft-obsessed. I'm just looking for that next fly cuspid without an S. You know, someone to make people feel instead of steal. Someone that gets right to the bone marrow with just a poem, bow, and arrow. Given what you've gone through, I hope to see you earn your wings, I really do. But frankly,
just picture me taking the weights off my ankles as I begin to ascend, rising until I'm looking down on the love tower I inherited, releasing love gases into the atmosphere. A world medicated with love. A world medicated by me.
I'll warn you, this month might be your busiest, and all your skills will be put to the test. But as high as you strive, Love, Inc. can't be possessed. In this position, you'll grow, and the diaper can go. But just so I know now, how are you with a bow, I mean bow?
I tend to aim like Oliver Queen. My arrow isn't meant to kill. It's on the healthier side. So picture a green arrow convincing your heart love is as healthy as eating your greens. My arrow is meant to gently pierce you, plant a seed, and watch the love grow in your heart. Watch the sparks fly as if it were July. I owe it all to a special person who taught me how colorful love can truly be.
Doesn't love fade? There are only 6 basic emotions and 7 shades.
It can fade out, can fade back in, movie-like, and still be as colorful as ever.
That was Casey Penn and Scott Raven with Cupid for Hire. To hear the thrilling conclusion of that poem, hit subscribe. And now, in the meantime and in between time, join us for Love Jones, where the real meets the rhyme.
Hi, I'm Renzo del Castillo, and as always, I'm joined by my bud,
Scott Raven, R-A-V-E-N, with the pen, not my pen, but KC Pen.
Yes.
Is going to be our guest.
We have the great KC Pen, and we are doing Love Jones with KC Pen. Guys, you're in for a treat. This was a great conversation. I do want to make sure to let you guys know that KC Pen is one of the co-founders of Pop-Up Poetry MIA, along with Crystal Espinoza. And the next event will be Saturday, January 10th from 5 to 8 p.m. at Miami Ironside. We're going to give you all this information in the show notes. Make sure you go because it is our boy's birthday. It will be Casey Penn's birthday celebration from 8 till 6 in the morning.
Whenever.
Mm.
Yes. Renzo and I both have had the pleasure of being parts of one of these pop-up poetry events. And they are lit to the max. Is that a phrase? I don't even know. But
from Saved by the Bell.
Pop-up poetry, you don't know where they're going to pop up, but you know there's going to be poetry that is popping. So please, get the info off the Instagram page. And buckle up and get your poems ready, get your heart open, and let's rock some Love Jones.
Because we have the amazing, the wonderful, the incredibly kind, and incredibly talented KC Penn.
Real Poets is an audio-only podcast that can also be visually read, like roses. Or when a director juxtaposes his or her most imposing reposes with characters, settings, and themes, composed of thrilling soundscapes, highest of stakes, and dreams. Hosted by a duo of real poets about real poets and the real poetry they've written and the films that have been written about them and their work.
Join us each week as we talk to another real poet with something to say and how a real poetry movie influenced them in some way. Then we each write a new poem inspired by our most recent viewing of the film and share it with all of you.
First and foremost, I just want to say I appreciate you, Renzo, and Scott as well, you know, for inviting me to the podcast, you know, to have a conversation and speak about poetry and Love Jones and everything. I really appreciate it. So give a little background about myself. So my artist name is KC Penn. I've been a spoken word poet for 10 years now. I was born in Miami, Florida. I moved to New York, early childhood. So moving to New York, that's really where I learned a lot about writing and poetry in general. I was a part of a poetry team in college called Urban Lyrics. Through practices and different events, I was able to, I'd say, like sharpen my pen, learn to understand poetry a little better, gain some experience performing. And that just really was a big part, you know, of my life, because one, it taught me how to express myself as a man growing up, you know, in a Caribbean household, you know, as a black man, you know, like black boy turns to a black man, you know, we're told to, like, we can't really show emotions. We got to be strong all the time. So writing was my outlet. So through writing, I learned, you know, how to express myself, stretch my emotions and everything. And it helped me a ton, you know, in all different areas of my life. I mean, I also think from writing, doing poetry and, the confidence I was able to gain, being able to stand in front of everyone and perform and recite these words that, you know, are vulnerable most of the time when I'm performing, it also helped me transition to my career. So I'm also a teacher as well. I'm an elementary school teacher. And being able to stand up in front of strangers and talk about how love hurt me or how I went through this or whatever life story I'm talking about really prepared me to stand in front of fourth graders and teach them about, you know, teach them about math, science, social studies, and everything, and have the confidence to be up there.
And love.
Yeah, for sure. So it helped out a ton. So, yeah, that's a little bit about me.
Nice. I'm just on a follow-up of that, like your kind of first entry into writing, were you someone that carried a notebook around? Where were you drawing this inspiration from as well? Like, what was the step that something that you wrote solitarily to then, all right, let me start reading this out?
Honestly, it was back in 2014. So 2014 was my sophomore year of college. So in high school, I like to say, like, I kind of flirted with poetry in high school. My English teacher was one of great, great teacher and a great mentor in general. And he used to challenge me a bit with my writing. And then as I would write, like, for example, just like creative writing, writing essays in class and everything, he told me I should try poetry. So I started writing some poetry and he told me that, you know, I had some skills and I should, you know, keep doing it. But at that time in high school, like, I was playing football, playing basketball, playing tennis. So sports was my life. So I kind of, you know, like, put it to the back burner and, like, I'm like, oh, you know what? Like, yeah, it's cool to write and stuff like that, but it doesn't interest me as much as these other things. So now fast forward to sophomore year of college. I was in a relationship with my high school sweetheart and we had broken up. So when we broken up, I was stuck, you know, I was lost, and I had all these emotions bottled up, a ton of emotions bottled up. And at first, you know, I took the outlet of, you know, I'm in college, like, I was partying, I'm drinking, I'm going out, trying to, you know, forget about everything, until eventually it's like, man, this is not helping at all, you know? So I started journaling a little bit, and from journaling, I actually started turning my journal entries into songs. So I started writing songs first.
So then I brought my writing and my songs to one of my friends who was a musician. His name is Jiggy Behavior. His artist name is Jiggy Behavior. So I brought my writings to Jiggy, and then he's just like, yo, this is pretty good. Like, you know how to write. And I'm like, yeah, but you know, like, I want to like do music now. And he's like, all right, cool. Like, you know, I can help you out. So he showed me how to, you know, shorten certain phrases so I can like flow on beat, learn how to rap a little bit. And that was huge for me. So first I fell in love with music and I started writing about the songs were about what I was going through. You know, it's talking about the first stage of the breakup where I'm drinking and I'm partying to forget. I'm stuck in the college life. And then it went from drinking, trying to forget to like, okay, now coming to realization, like, hey, like, this is not how you're going to get over your first love. Like, you really have to do the work. Okay. So writing about it, venting about it, being vulnerable about it is a big step. That was the beginning of like the artist in me, like putting myself out there. But I started doing music. I started doing music videos and everything. And that's where I really had the confidence to like share all the writings I keep to myself because I wasn't sure if people would like it. I wasn't sure if I was being too vulnerable, if I was going to get judged too much, you know. Ultimately, I took that step and no regrets. You know, I'm here today because I took that leap, you know, of faith with my writing to push it out there.
Okay. Can I ask you a question?
Oh,
I'm sorry, Scott. Go ahead.
No, you go.
All right. Well, I'll go.
Please.
You mentioned poetry was a way to get in touch with your vulnerability.
Yeah.
But the movie you chose today, Love Jones, could also be titled How to Use Poetry to Avoid Being Vulnerable.
Yes. So
or as I was joking with Scott earlier, how to not apologize or communicate until the very end. Why did you choose this movie? Thinking about the context of your journey as a poet.
Mm-hmm. So a few reasons. One, I love the portrayal of like, although, you know, it was a little messy between Darius and Nina here and there.
Sure.
I just love, you know, like 90s black love, you know, like being shown through music, through R&B, through movies. So like, I feel like that was like one of the main things that I really liked. But also, I really enjoyed like seeing, you know, like someone like courting somebody through poetry, you know, like how they met at the lounge. You know, he goes up there, he recites a poem. And, you know, she's intrigued by the poetry and everything. And like, to me, you know, like poetry is very romantic.
Mm.
You know, like I write different topics about different stuff, but I feel it's always easiest for me to write about lust and love, whether it's good or bad, you know? So I think poetry, especially in my eyes, you know, it's a lot about romance. And to see, you know, how the movie started off, like it kind of caught my attention right away. I'm like, okay, this is cool. And like, I'm a poet. He's a poet. You know, like sometimes, you know, like you may speak, you know, romantically to somebody who's in the crowd who you just met. And also, I really like the fact that it shows his faults as well. He was head over heels about Nina. You know, he was head over heels, but he's trying to play it cool. Like, no, let me not do too much. Like, Nina needs me. I don't need Nina. And at the same time, like, Nina's kind of thinking like, okay, does he really want me? Or is he just, you know, just messing around and stuff? But still to this day, at the age I'm at now, not necessarily me, but like guys who I know around the same age group, it's something that I feel like it's common where if you really, really like someone, like a woman, most of the time I used to see it a lot growing up, but I still see it now, like with older men as well. They try to play too cool, act like you don't really like her. And that can bite you. Bite you in the butt, you know, it could bite you in the butt.
I mean, I guess we can say ass. It's okay.
It could bite you in the ass because it's like, man, if you're playing too cool, like you don't really care about this girl. And like deep down inside, like it's either she's the one or someone you seriously want to pursue. Like, be a man about it, you know, like go ahead and like tell her how you feel. Like, there's nothing wrong with putting yourself out there. You know, I think a lot of people get too caught up in like the past when they were hurt. And they hold on to that wound forever. Or they just, you know, like they're just too scared to be all in. And I think it was a good lesson because throughout the movie, although Darius is really, really feeling Nina, she's feeling him too. He plays it too cool. And then at the end, she ends up leaving, you know, like she's getting ready to leave. And then it's not to the end. So he's like, oh, shit. Wow. Like, I'm not about to let her like leave. Like, I love this girl. I have to make sure she knows this.
I was going to talk about, like, the first poem that is spoken. There's the chance. They have the conversation, if you remember, before he goes up to actually perform his poem. That's a more vulnerable talk. It's an actual talk about romance versus kind of love. Then he gets up and it's a straight up sex poem, right? Like, it is
explicit. All right, you know,
the selection of my erection inside, you know, yeah, completely there. I know when I was first writing out, for me, the poetry was a way for me to be more vulnerable emotionally, whereas I would be able to share things that I was feeling that maybe I didn't even have the courage to even say directly to somebody, or I would write it in the poem and then share it, you know, with that other person. That was the way to get my emotion. I don't know if the film necessarily used poetry in that manner. But yeah. I'm curious, I guess, for you too, was there a time, are you sharing poems with ladies, right? We've all done it where, like, all right, you're up there and you deliver a poem and it's attractive to somebody will come up to you and be really into it. You write a poem that's about love or lust. It's not necessarily about the actual person. And it, you know, and it starts, you know, a conversation. It's that conversation started. There's something a little, you know, as you get older, then it's like, all right, this poem is about this person that I'm actually delivering to. He went straight in for that. Like, this is somebody who's like, all right, this is Nina. I don't even know if my mind was like, did he actually write this for her, or was it about, like, Nina Simone? And then it was it was just like that. So that was another question I had too. So first of all, did you give poems to, you know, like, to other people? But also, have you ever, be honest, I'll be honest as well, written a poem for somebody and then given it and delivered it to somebody else?
Honestly, no, I haven't. I haven't done that before. But I have written a poem about somebody before.
Yep.
And it only one time, though. This was my ex-girlfriend from 2 years ago. So I wrote the poem. It was a romantic poem, but also, like, it was a romantic poem. Like, it was pretty much like an ode to her. But also at the same time, like, I was talking about, like, how I was struggling a bit at first because I was still caught up, not still in love with my first love, but, like, I was just kind of, like, worried. I'm like, hey, man, like, I haven't opened up in a while. And last time I opened up, I got hurt. Do I want to do this again? And then eventually she made me feel very safe and comfortable. So I became vulnerable with her. So I performed it in front of her. And honestly, I was very shy about it. I was very shy. Writing the poem was easy because, you know, like, I felt very strong emotions for this woman. But once I got up there, it was like, okay, she's here. She's sitting here. Like, I'm about to perform this in front of her. It went really well. Like, I enjoyed it. She really enjoyed it. And that was the only time, you know, like, I've done that. Other times when I do, like, love and lust poems, it's about, like, an experience, you know, that I've gone through, or maybe something I heard through conversation with somebody, and, like, I wanted to, like, write from their point of view, which, you know, makes it a lot easier for me because at that point, it's like, there's no person it's attached to and, like, who's in the crowd, like, watching me perform anything.
Right. Well, it may have been inspired in part from a real experience too, but then it becomes a kind of, a universal way of, that's where poetry, when it's being used to attract rather than it being an expression of what you're feeling.
I'll weigh in on this a little bit because you touched upon some things. So I've written poems for people and I've given them to people, but then I also perform them. And when I perform them, it's no longer mine. So I've definitely been open mics where I say something like, to build a home in the space between your collarbone and your bosom. And I see an audible, like, and women grabbing the space between their collarbone and your bosom. And then they come out later and they're complimentary about it, or that it touched them in some way. I don't know. When it comes to Darius, what was it that he said? I have it here. One of his first lines is, romance is about the possibility of the thing. You see, it's about the time between the time when you first meet some fine-ass woman and when you first make love to her. So he's talking about all these lofty ideals. His poetry is full of all these lofty ideals. But who approached him? He didn't approach Nina. Nina approached him. She made the first move. Later, at the very end, Nina reads a poem to him to be the catalyst for their final interaction in the movie, which we'll get to. I think this is an example of poetry being used to avoid vulnerability. And also, when your ideals meet up with reality, do you have the courage to see them through, or do you back up? And that's when he tries to be cool. I mean, like,
when he's having that with Vaughn, right? When he's having that conversation with Isaiah Washington, he's saying like, nah, man, I don't, she doesn't play me. I play her, et cetera.
Yep. But
then he goes and he's, when he's off camera and he's not in front of his boys, he's not fronting. So I think that's an interesting question, but I just want to give a brief synopsis of the movie to bring everybody back, and let's start discussing these themes tied to the movie. Does that sound good, fellas?
Yep.
So brief synopsis, Love Jones is a stylish, I think it's very stylish, intimate romantic drama that follows the evolving relationship between our boy, Darius Love Hall. He's a smooth talking poet, and Nina Mosley, who is a talented photographer, right? And I think what they show is talented, but everybody considers her work great. So they meet at the Poetry Lounge.
The opening really quick too. There's like the black and white shots of the city as well.
Yeah, and I think that's her poetry. I mean, that's her photography.
Possibly her photography, yeah.
Because I see some of the same pictures in the book that she was reading. So we start from her perspective. It's funny because it's an overlay of somebody reading a poem. So it's both of them at the beginning, both of their love languages. So they meet at the sanctuary and quickly fall into a romance, but they're just kicking it, as they say. But their careers, their past relationships, miscommunications, all of that stuff challenge their connection. And it's set in the backdrop of Chicago's art scene. The film explores love, vulnerability, the rhythm of modern Black intimacy, because as you said, it wasn't that successful. I think it made like 12.5 million when it came out, but it became a cult hit. It became a cult hit, especially for its impact on culture. And it's, along with The Best Man, Brown Sugar, it's considered one of these touchstones of Black romance, Black love, Black film.
I mean, I was just going to add that it's a touchstone on Black film, but then the themes do become, I guess, to all relationships at some point. You mentioned...
I just wanted to open it up, right? Because poetry is central to Love Jones. It's a narrative device, and it's also an emotional connector and also a way to avoid that emotional connection as well. It plays these different parts. It's used to introduce the character. The first thing he truly says to her is a blues for Nina, which, again, I feel that he just put the name there. I think he had that. He didn't come up with that right there. Being a poet.
He had that one in the back pocket for sure.
You know, it was great. It was great, right? I want to be the, what was it? I want to be the funk. I'm the blues in your left thigh, and I want to be the funk in your right. But it also expresses unspoken feelings, because their monologues also resemble poems in terms of like me meter and rhyme and just cadence. It builds community too, right? Poetry is a social hub. A lot of the key scenes where people gather is around poetry, which really resonated with me.
And that's part I wanted to talk about, like that vibe. Have you ever been a part of a scene like The Sanctuary? Now, we were talking a little bit before how Kenny's building kind of a similar scene. You know, we've got one in Miami, the Miami, you know, Palms and Poetry Club, that has a bit of a vibe. But yeah, just to see, you know, this club, you got jazz music in the background. You got, you know, where a poet is up there and people are kind of painting the background. If you choose to use them, you know, while you're doing a poem, you got, you know, the kufi hats, you got every style of hat, you know, representing. Who knows if you're getting different style. There was the Kangol hats I sported for my first 5 years as poet. I had the backwards Kangol hat myself. Maybe I got it from that movie, who knows, but I still have it. It's all tattered now and like, it's just a nice memento.
My head is 63 centimeters in circumference, so I have never worn a hat. I mean, you barely see me wear a hat.
Oh, yeah. Any headgear for you, Kenny? Or any hats that you...
Well, not necessarily like for poetry. I do wear like baseball caps here and there and stuff like that. But yeah, I never like donned a Kangol hat or anything, you know, like I guess stylish in the sense of poetry.
Was there anything that went into mind when you were to perform? Some people are like, I wear that black t-shirt, I go up. But did you have like the poet hat? You know, mine might have been a security, like a Linus security blanket, where I would just put that on. You know, I mean, you got the dreads as well, which
love the dreads.
Thank you. Appreciate it. For me, I would say I can't think of like,
it's not like calculated for you. Yeah, there's nothing. Yeah, like you're like, I'm not gonna wear this for this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, yeah, nothing calculated. Mm-mm.
There was a guy at the Poetry Slam in New York. He would pack 3 shirts for the slam. And if there was another performer that had the same color on as his, he would change it so he would stand out more. It wouldn't be the same one. It was that strategic for him.
There's a lot of thought that goes into it for him.
That he had wanted, But in college, you know, we had this thing called Jazz and Java. So I hosted a thing called Verbal Man, but then Jazz and Java was like, all right, all the campus, different people came and they had a live jazz band kind of like playing in the background. Yeah. I love having music in the background of a poetry event.
Me too.
Yeah, I mean, it can, like, you're delivering, you have your own rhythms, but it breaks you out of it. But they're improvising and you're kind of improvising kind of like how it's going to flow. I just, I love that it brings new life, you know, to it really keeps me like emotionally in there. Did you have a scene like that at your college too? Or
not necessarily in my college, but on a few different instances. So one, the first time I actually saw it was in Atlanta. So I have some family in Atlanta, and I was in Atlanta for a few years after college. So there, I'm not sure if the lounge is still open now, but there was a lounge at the time I was there called Apache Cafe in Atlanta. And Apache was really, really big. You know, you had some really good poets going there. And I believe it was every Sunday night. Every Sunday night, they would have open mic. And then once a month on Tuesday, they would have open mic where a special host would fly out to Atlanta, and his style of the open mic was with some music playing in the background. So they had some jazz music going on, some calm, subtle music playing in the background. And a lot of the times it would even like match the tone of the poet up there who's performing. So I remember my first time, like I'm seeing everything and my name's on the sign up list. And I'm like, wait, the music gonna be playing behind us? And I'm like, oh, that's cool. And I'm listening to everybody go. I'm just like, oh, this is really cool. But in my head, I'm like, how am I about to flow with the music and everything? How am I gonna do this? So I just started thinking back. I'm like, okay, like before I started doing poetry, I was doing music. I was rapping. It's gonna come second nature for me. So I go up there. I start spitting the piece. I start off slow. The music starts off slow, and then like as I build up, it's built up. So it's matching me. Everything's going very, very smooth. And I love it to the point where I would love to do, you know, like a show, whether it's like something Crystal and I are partnering with together, doing it together, or something I decide to do on my own, or just something where I perform at again, where there's a live band there while people are performing, because I think it adds so much to like the experience. You know, I think it's super, super cool.
I wanted to talk a little bit about place. We're in Chicago. Okay. This thing is in Chicago. For those that know, that just the birthplace of slam poetry was in Chicago, the Green Mill, a guy named Mark Smith. There at the time, you know, there was a couple of different types of venues, I guess, that went on. Now, if we're to call that venue, you know, tell me if you agree or disagree that there's the more, I say, there's the Black Room or there's the Urban Room of poetry, right? Then there's a more inclusive room of different types that didn't exist, or the more like kind of super pretentious room sometimes, like the purely academic room. I know that exists in stand-up a lot. Poetry, when it first came out, there was kind of those separate type rooms. I don't know if you've encountered that. I know early on. Now it feels to me to be more of that inclusive space, but there are certain spots or certain crowds where you will find a particular demographic. Mm-hmm. This being, all right, that is, you know, like, all right, it would be considered maybe a Black room where it's like, all right, more, there is that music, Black culture being celebrated in all of its beauty in so many different facets. I know as a white dude that I would love going into those rooms too and being able to rock like a piece.
Yeah.
Speak on that if you have encountered even one way or the other. Do you see a distinction still? Do those types of rooms still exist within poetry? Is there a difference?
I've definitely like encountered like, you know, different spaces like that. For example, when I've done poetry in Atlanta, Atlanta's very, very Black. You know, like, and like I've done poetry in New York, here in Miami, in different like, New York City, and in different colleges like upstate New York, where me and my college poetry team used to like compete at different like slam events. And by far, for sure, Atlanta was like the most Black. I would say like it didn't really change the way I performed or anything. I know I felt like the energy, like the culture in the room. you know, which I liked it, you know, like it was cool, you know, like by all means, like I enjoyed it. I think I did a good job performing. I love seeing all the other people perform. And like, I would say like the content is a bit different there, you know, like you have people who are talking, you have the occasional love poem, the love poem, the heartbroken, the good love. And you also have poems about, you know, talking about like politics, you know, poems talking about race, you know, how this person grew up differently because there were a black boy or black girl being raised in a town where, you know, like it was kind of racist over there, you know? So you hear a lot of different stories and stuff. So I would say in those specific places, like we're in Atlanta, I would hear more poems about racial struggle, talking about like the injustice of like politics and government and things like that. Now, compared to now when I'm in upstate New York competing with my college poetry team at different colleges, you're not really hearing much of that. You're hearing different stories. You would still hear the occasional love poem. You would hear poems about hope, about rebirth, different topics, but you would never really hear too much about like race or politics and things like that. So I'd say, yeah. So I've been a lot of like different like spaces when it comes to poetry, but I think I enjoy every single space and I think I adapt very well to whatever space I'm in when it comes to poetry.
I want to touch upon that with you as well, because many poets, including Saul Williams, have cited Love Jones as a gateway to a wider public interest in performance poetry, right? How did this film shape perceptions of spoken word in the mainstream media?
Yeah, well, I'm saying early on, you know, it pigeonholed poetry just as love poetry. The subject matter that was addressed poetically in the film was just that, relationships and poetry. Politics seeped in a little bit more. Race, I don't even think there is race-related poem in the movie.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
In that movie. I mean, it's called Love Jones. They didn't know a way to make poetry pop on film yet in the other types of poems in this movie, I would think. Or poets weren't going there with their subject matter. They were just starting to a little bit. But it definitely gave a boost. I mean, it made people aware that these events were at. And, you know, for me, yeah, like, you know, white dude from Jersey, wanting to seek out those events as well, to go where there was, you know, such enthusiasm, culture being celebrated, where they're, you know, I mean, wanted to be a part of Slam, that movie, which we may talk on a different one, that shows kind of like the political side of it, and race relations a little bit as well. Mm-hmm. But this is, yeah, love poetry.
Yeah.
Kenny, yeah, what how about for you?
Because I think, Renzo, you mentioned about the movie and kind of like the mainstream media of it. I will say this, for me, kind of like the way I grew up, you know, like I grew up like in a household, you know, like Caribbean household, where it's like kind of how I mentioned early on in the when we first started talking, how, you know, as a boy, you know, we're told all these things. As a little boy, it's like, hey, like at a certain, once I reach a certain age, and this was coming from like men and women in my family, and like even like friends of the family, just elders, like, hey, like, no more crying at this point, you know, like you've hit that age. We don't want to see tears anymore. Mm. Okay. Like that, you don't cry anymore. Something happens, you know, keep your head up. You got to push through. So I'm growing up in a way it was like, okay, like no emotion. I got to be robotic. Like this is what it means to be a man. So I'm thinking that, but at the whole time, like I'm struggling because I like to think of myself as somebody who's like very emotional. Although some people may say no, like I just think you don't really know me yet until you realize I have a very emotional side. I'm very expressive, you know, like I have no problem telling people I love them, you know, whether it's a guy or girl, friends, family, no matter what it is, I'm very open with my feelings. But growing up, I had to like keep that all bottled in because I was taught to like, you know, be raised a certain way. And the point I'm trying to make is once I saw Love Jones and I'm seeing a black man, you know, like on stage and just expressing himself, you know, granted, you know, he's talking about, you know, sex and very lusty and stuff like that, but still expressing himself in a way where just like at that time growing up, me in high school, middle school, like I would never think to go on stage and do poetry because in my head, I'm like, man, my friends, everybody's like, yo, what is this guy doing? Like, that's not what we do. You know, we're supposed to be playing sports. We're supposed to be manly men, you know, like we don't go up there and talk about our feelings and stuff like that. So Love Jones was really like in a sense, and like I feel like some of my friends will say the same thing, which is like, oh, yo, like, it's cool to do poetry. Mm. You know, like, this is pretty cool, you know? So I think it kind of helped shift that a bit, you know, in terms of mainstream. It was like, some people before was like, man, you know, poetry is, you know, that's not really the cool thing to do. It's like, hey, you know what, yo, poetry could be cool. Yeah, let's go watch poetry. Even if we're not performing, let's go watch a show. Let's go to the lounge. Let's go listen to some poetry. Let's go do this. Let's go do that. So I think it helped out, you know?
So for me, I'm the one who just watched the film. And so I don't know, I can see now looking back the cultural impact it had. And I think one of the things that I really enjoyed about this film is it avoided a lot of stereotypes and stereotypical behavior. You never see the friends come to blows over Nina, right? You never mm-hmm. see Lawrence Tate and Bill Bellamy go like fight each other. They yeah. avoid that violence. I think that even though it's not completely overt, the style of poetry and the cadence and the words and the expressions used are much closer to a different world than Full House. Mm-hmm. So I can see that impact of Black culture coming through, even though it's not yeah. overtly stated. I think that's why it just is, right? Like the movie just is. The people make mistakes and it's all encoded in this rhythm that I really appreciate. I can definitely see if I had seen Love Jones, I would have probably wanted to start using that diction and cadence in terms of.
Yeah.
Speaking. Yeah. But I think it has. Let me ask you another question. I want to ask both of you. Mm-hmm. Question. Let's talk about A Blues yeah. for Nina, and then we can talk about the second poem in the movie, the bookend poems. But do you think Darius's poem is romantic or performative, or is it both? Because again, I think that he put her name there, and I think he talks about it. He talks like he knows all about love, but through the movie, he learns. He yeah. talks about lust, not love, and that's something Nina calls out when they meet outside the club. Kenny, let me start with you, and then Scott, what are your thoughts on that?
First, I want to go performative. I want to just go ahead and say performative, because I guess like my background with being, you know, a poet as well, just kind of like how it came about, you know, it was so quick. Yes, it was smooth. It was really, really dope, you know? But, like, I just feel like he had a poem just there, like, in the back pocket, like, oh, this is one of the romantic poems right here, and just easily just inserted Nina here and there to, like, make it feel like this is for you only, where mm-hmm. that poem could have been for anyone.
Yeah.
So I think it's definitely performative, but also, at the same time, I think, although, you know, like, the poem, you know, like I feel like the way he was thinking was just like, okay, this is lust, you know, like I'm just trying to sleep with her, you know, and see what happens. I also feel like a sense of a little romance there. Like, although Nina approached him, I feel like he was really feeling her.
Yeah, and, he stumbled. He stumbled over the drink. Yeah.
I feel like he was really, really feeling her. But at the same time, maybe his ego's like, nah, I can't really feel her too much. Like, you know, like I'm still gonna be that smooth, cool
I'm
guy.
A man, right?
Yeah, you know, like that, you know. So I think it's more so performative, but I could see a little like bit of romance, you know, there.
Scotty.
Yeah, he's performing. It's performative. He wants to hear kind of the props from the crowd when they mm-hmm. come off as really. He's able to be a little bit more confident up there. Whereas their first interaction, he wasn't able to break through. He's more vulnerable right after, and she kind of forces it upon him when he has to take his shirt off during the photography thing, you know, like, so the whole, all of me is itching for him to give that vulnerable poem, whether to come at the end of the movie, you know, and as we mm-hmm. talked, it comes from Nina. Like, I want to hear another poem of his. But maybe the director decided not to include another one because mm-hmm. the movie itself, I feel, has spawned so many poems from people on issues of maybe divorce, on issues of, you know, infidelity, on issues mm-hmm. of love. Whereas the audience is left to watch the film and then like, oh, this might be a way I've seen this. I'm going to write the thing after it, as opposed to letting the characters give you all the answers in a poem.
So I think he does give a poem, but it's not in his usual style. He takes away the poetry from his words when he says, I'm sorry for my part in this. I want us to be together. I love you. She doesn't say it. She mouths it at the end after. So she went and read this beautiful poem, which I think wasn't performative. I think her poem was very vulnerable.
Yeah.
And then when he meets with her when he waits for her outside the club and they meet in the rain, he doesn't talk the way that he talked the entire movie. He's very direct, a different cadence, no rhyming, less rhythm, in order to say what he truly feels. It's as almost as if he had to unlearn poetry to be poetic. That's the way I caught it.
I like that. Yes.
Like, I mean, they have the kiss in the... They have the... Yeah, that's well said.
That's the kiss in the rain.
You know, that's the poetry for it. In any event, I mean, there was some reunion with them like years later. I saw they did like a commercial, Lorenz Tate and Nia Long, that there had never been, you know, like kind of a, all right, let's hear, you know, what would their poetry be like now? The photography thing I wanted to touch a little bit upon, though, the vulnerability of it. Whereas, yeah, he, you know, doesn't want her to use it for a magazine.
Yeah.
And that kind of parallels that, oh, can you use a poem that you wrote for somebody and it be for commercial gain, like to, you know, either win a contest or to, you know, in a book, or which he would get, you know, kind of credit for. But I'm interested in your kind of experiences with pairing up with other forms of art too. And like somebody, they have a talk about the Mozart quote, I believe, which is about something about excellence. I don't know if you have it down there, Renzo, but like being the best at what you do. And she says it's from George Bernard Shaw.
Mozart. He calls it Mozart. She calls him out for being George Bernard Shaw. And he's like, I guess I'm trying too hard. Right. So he, you know.
Right. So this spawned off into another question. What is excellence in poetry? What is it to be the best or to be great in poetry when?
Yeah. I mean, they have Poetry Slam where you're scoring one thing after the other, but
how can you ever really say what is better? You know, somebody's hardship isn't any better than your hardship, you know? Like, yes, if you're adding all those elements. For you, Kenny, what is excellence in poetry to you?
Excellence in poetry. Okay, I like that question. Automatically, because I feel like I'm more so like a spoken word poet, so I start thinking about spoken word and performing-wise. So excellence to me when it comes to like spoken word poetry is someone who's up there performing and can like go back to like the emotions and whatever they felt when they wrote the poem. Like when you're up there, like for example, I'm thinking about one of my favorite poets and her name is Layla and she's from New York City. She's from the Bronx. And whenever I'll see her go up and perform, she had a way of making a room of, let's say, 60 to 70 people feel exactly what she's up there talking about. So it was a sense of like, I guess I can say crowd control. So having like a good, you know, crowd control, feeling your words. Because if you don't feel your words, I feel like nobody can really feel your words. You have to feel what you're saying. You have to really feel it. So being able to feel your words, having the crowd like to relate to what you're talking about. And also I feel like just having like some colorful language as well, like your rhyme schemes are unique here and there. And just overall, just like having like the confidence to just go out there and just perform like what you're writing, you know, like whether it's like a super vulnerable piece or even something, it doesn't have to be vulnerable. It could be something, you know, funny. You're telling a story, you're talking about somebody else's point of view. As long as you go up there and you feel what you're saying, and I feel like the audience can like relate and just kind of be there, like really like paying attention to you, your movements, what you're saying and everything. I feel like that like defines like excellence in like spoken word poetry, at least.
Right. And that's still subjective just because that may be your view. And if someone does get the audience, the proof is in the pudding, but you're met with, you know, you have an audience of all different opinions and preferences where, like, so somebody might, not hear it. Depending on how it is said. I put a premium like on craftsmanship, which is why, you know, even with like music, like I am more of a lyric guy than the beat guy. I want dope lyrics ahead of the rhythm, but can't deny being swept away, like what you're saying. Like, personal preferences on the craftsmanship of something. When you're in the room of somebody that, you're with them. They're totally connected. I like to think of, all right, what happened even before they got up there? They're putting effort, they're pouring their whole heart into it. And then they've also, then they're on stage. Renzo, how about you just for similar, I just love to hear. Excellent.
I keep thinking about the Maya Angelou quote, which is people will forget what you said, but they'll remember how you made them feel, mm-hmm. which I want to apply that to what we're talking about, but I don't think I can do it fully because I also respect craftsmanship. I also savor words and see how they come together. Like it's the structure for me that where I recognize mastery of skill, but also if it's inauthentic, it's the reason why I think the three of us can recognize a poem by ChatGPT that somebody's submitting maybe to Kenny's class, right? Like there's something there. I think that excellence in poetry is about creation and expression of truth, not necessarily reality, not necessarily something that literally happened, but something that feels real. Even if you're writing about somebody else's experience, what you're putting forth on the paper or on the stage, if it's real, I think people will connect. I've always seen it happen. I haven't been to every poetry slam in the world. I haven't been everywhere, but everywhere that I've been to, and I don't want to generalize, but I see people connect with what's real. Yeah. So I appreciate the craftsmanship. I would like, that would be part of my metric for it, but I think it boils down to authenticity. People don't like it when you lie to them. They know when you're faking stuff. At some level, they know. You know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree.
Right. And the only counter to that is I like an imaginative poem too. I mean, you know, I got a poem where I turned into a chicken. I mean, I'm obviously not doing that, but the freedom with which to also, and especially if you're working with youth, that you don't necessarily have to write about pain or trauma, which is great to be able to express that poetically, but pure imagination, you know, kind of, all right, you're the most creative thought onto the page. Yes, if you can find a personal connection to it, great. Just to not limit that avenue.
Yeah, and I think that ties into some of the themes of the movie. Like, was it Vaughn who said, "Let me tell you something about love. It's not subject to much discretion." Or Nina telling him, and again, this is the repetition of things that she's mentioned before. You always want what you want when you want it. Why is everything so urgent? And I think one of the things that the movie told me, and I'd like to hear your take on it, is poetry is great, but it's a double-edged sword. Don't hurt yourself by being inauthentic. Be authentic. Use it to be authentic because you can definitely alienate true feeling with skill. Because Lawrence Tate's character is very skilled. I mean, I know it wasn't Lawrence Tate. I believe that it was Sonia Sanchez and Kevin Powell, these poets that they read, that wrote the poems that we heard throughout the movie. But even in the movie, even in their dialogue, you know, Vaughn really stands out for me because he says stuff that, let me break it down so it can forever and consistently be broke. The way they talk to each other is in meter, in rhyme, in poetry. But there are moments where you see it break down. And I don't think you need to avoid poetry to tell truth. But I think it's an evolution for someone who has lived ideals and not reality, right? As you see him talking about his relationships later.
Yeah.
About the only one he truly was happy with was, I forget her name, and he messed it up. But he's really thinking about Nina, right? So it's only then when he undresses that poetry that he's able to tell truth. But Nina learned... She used poetry to tell her truth. So I think it presents both sides, but I think the theme that it really pushes is if you're going to do poetry, by all means be skilled, but don't lie to yourself.
Yes. Because
everybody else can see.
I agree. And I think it's very, very important to like undress yourself and like tell your naked truths, you know, like you can be the most skilled poet for sure. But like, if it's not authentic and you're not feeling it because you know it's not coming from like deep down inside, like people are gonna be able to tell and like sniff it out, like, yeah, there's something off going on there, you know, like, so I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, they struggle to be transparent, but their dialogue is always fun. It's always mm-hmm. like Taming of the Shrew fun, or you know what I mean? Like the way they interact with each other is always fun, but they always miscommunicate because they're afraid to be vulnerable.
Yes.
She starts playing a game with him. I'm gonna go see what's up with this guy. And her friend is like, well, why don't you tell him? And if he plays it cool, then leave him. You can do what you want, and then you can figure it out. He falls for that hook, line, and sinker. But then he's like, well, you know what? You're gonna go see some guy. Instead of telling you, I want you to stay here because that's what he wants.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But he can't admit it to himself. His friend.
The ego again. Yes.
Yeah. His ego doesn't admit it. So he goes and finds another girl. When she comes back, the first thing she goes is to the club to see him. He's not there. And she sees him at a bookstore kissing the other girl. She decides to go out with his friend. They see each other at a party. She's embarrassed. The friend says, go away. He goes and chases her. I just want to make sure that you're okay. They reconnect. But then she can't stop thinking about the girl, and he can't keep the image of her having sex with his friend out of his head. And we don't know if she did it or not.
Yeah.
I don't think they did, but they can't say it. They can't just clearly state, I didn't do this. I didn't do that. And he lets her go, even though at the end he did start changing and change it. Like when she leaves on the train to go for her new job, he rushes to it and he misses it, but he doesn't call her. I don't know how that works right now with social media. I don't think he has these legs on it, but it's 1 year later for him to be able to say, I love you, for her to write a poem for him because she had her pride, he had his pride, and they can't just connect. And I think poetry can help people connect, but it can also help people stay apart.
I agree 1,000% to both of those. Yeah. Poetry can help you guys, can help people connect, but also keep you apart too and disconnect. I've seen it happen in my life. Both ways, for sure.
And to be honest, you know, I don't think I had that dual perspective till later. Maybe I don't even know if I had it the first time even seeing it, where that was shaped after overtime, where like, I mean, I had been a kid with poetry, you know, like hiding behind language or being too wordplay heavy sometimes, that not getting to directly what I was actually feeling. Where once then I started being able to allow, all right, this is what's really happening in my life, but also use the particular style that I have, I was able to kind of merge those two. Where, I mean, you know, it's interesting hearing, you know, you shape this and articulate it so wonderfully. And I keep thinking to my, you know, 20-year-old self or 19-year-old self that wasn't there with it. And, you know, there are a couple other, the courtship, we didn't touch a little bit upon, you know, like how he actually shows up our house, if you remember the first time.
Problematic these days, like, for sure.
Definitely.
Like he pursues that, you know, I mean, questionable, I think from and she pays with a check.
Have you seen those memes of like asking out a girl now, but in a 90s music video style, and then like the guy's chasing her and all, and then like gets maced?
No, I actually haven't.
I'll send it to you. That is
please.
Right. It's considered cute and persistence, and now it's like you are violating my space, right?
Mm-hmm.
but also their meeting after the poetry club is also in like an artistic venue too. I love that it's at the record store, which those encounters do not happen anymore whatsoever. I have some fond memories of, you know, like Virgin Megastore and in Times Square, as well as kind of, you know, the college one that you know, I had, just, you know, strolling, striking up conversations with people based on their music selections what albums they checked and stuff like that.
We have a couple of minutes left. Did any of you write a poem based on this movie?
I actually have. It's crazy because once Scott told me about, you know, about the podcast and everything, I'm like, And I mentioned Love Jones. I'm like, wow, I actually have a poem by Love Jones from years ago.
Please.
And like, I'll definitely read it. And I'm thinking about reading it on open mic on Monday just because, you know, we're having this conversation and everything. Yeah. I'm going to try to memorize it in time.
Do you guys mind if I share the one I wrote today based on the movie?
Of course. Yeah. You go first.
It gives you a chance to look for it. This one is called A Blues for Mrs. Jones. My pen is a prudent poet, deliberate with its strokes. Afraid to stutter and blow it, all betting on baseless hopes. So I apologize for all these words left unwritten, and the ones I dressed up for you in poetry,
which I unbutton now, smitten by the nakedness of truth, asking you to flow with me. Come on now, baby. Let's go on and get out of this rain. Truth is, I'm scared of getting wet and maybe of refraining from composing this refrain. My pen is a prudent poet, thrusting on you rhyme upon rhyme. Come find me after this last stanza and know it. I promise I'll say it right this time.
Hell yeah.
Redemption song. Yes. Yeah. That's a TBC. That's a to be continued.
Yeah, I wish I had like a bass behind me doing it and giving it to describe my collaboration, but there's a lot of Easter eggs for this film. So I can definitely get a couple of poems out of this movie. I'm so grateful to Casey Penn, Kenny, for suggesting it.
Yes, Kenny,
if you have it, please.
I'm going to rewatch the movie again this weekend, and I'm going to write a new poem because this poem, this was years ago. This was a Kenny Rhymes poem, so I'm going to write this Casey Penn now.
All right.
Still, I'm going to read it, though. See, I could be your Darius Love Hall. Speak words that can serenade your soul. You could be my Nina Mosley. I promise to hold you closely. If you want me to come in for coffee after the first date, then so be it. If the traffic signal is green when it comes to intercourse, then so be it. I can give you different strokes, like 1980s black sitcom, from the side, from the back, you name it. But this ain't no love thing. We just kicking it. I guess that's something we'll end up telling ourselves to freeze our four chambers in hopes that they don't warm up. 1997 in the shy city. I hope that you won't be shy with me, whoever you may be. Will you be like Nina? Will you have me hooked like Boxer after he made contact with the glove? Will you have me trying to fight off the feeling of falling in love? Will you have me constantly saying, we just kicking it? When I'm thinking of kicks coming from your womb, will you have me running down trains just so I can say that I don't want you to leave? Or are you just a fictional character from a movie that I wish my life could imitate?
What you talking about, Ken?
It's been an absolute delight to have you here. We consider you a really good friend. So glad to have met you in the
this
community. So can you please tell us where we can find you on the social, where people can see your work, see you perform, and what you're up to?
Real quick, thank you both, for once again, for having me, for the podcast and everything. I really, really enjoy it. Also consider you both friends as well. Thank you to NPCs that was able to meet each other. And I hope our friendship continues to grow. And I hope we continue to do poetry together and do some collaborations and everything,
Oh, that'd be dope. Yeah.
For sure. So you can find me on social media. So I have a poetry page. It's Words by Casey Penn. I believe it's _ Words by Casey Penn. And also my main account, I post performance videos and poetry as well. That's _ Past the Pen. And I also have a website as well. It's my old artist name, but still, you can go check it out. It's called KennyRhymes.com. I have a lot of poems written there, videos, and my website's really where you see, I guess, like my range when it comes to writing, because when it comes to performing, I feel like I perform about certain topics, but on my website, I write about everything, anything you could think about. So I think that'll be, if people who are interested, in seeing my work, my website's like the best place to visit to really see all the things that I discuss when it comes to my artistry and everything.
Thank you, Kenny. Scott, anything you want to say?
No, pleasure to chat with you. Look forward to the next event where we can all rhyme. Kenny and I did write a poem together, The New Cupid, which we debuted on Valentine's
Day. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Oh, snap. I want to hear it.
Every year.
Mm-hmm. We have to knock some dust off of that one and do it again.
You should.
Yep. I mean, it's like an 8-minute piece, but it's great conceptually.
It was fun.
Thank you guys for putting Love Jones into my life. I really appreciate it. I think this film captures the aching truth of that in relationships, people often fail each other, and it's not out of malice, right? But out of fear, out of pride, out of a struggle to speak their hearts, fully.
Mm-hmm.
But it still insists that reconciliation is possible. And when we find the courage to say what we really mean or ask for what we really want and it does it through poetry. So yeah. Five stars.
Yes.
Thank you all. Thank you for listening to the podcast. We appreciate you.
Yes, sir. Appreciate y'all.
Real Poets is produced and hosted by Renzo del Castillo and Scott Raven. Original music composed by Gabby Weitzenfeld. Episode art and visuals by the Real Poets team. New episodes come out every other Thursday. Hit subscribe, download the episode, and leave a review to help us grow. This has been a Real Poets production. And remember to always keep it real.